Fine.
This is Part-Time Fanboy. We might as well just get started.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm here with Paul Edwards and Barry Negrin, and we are here to talk, well, since it's going to be a while till the Peter Capaldi Doctor Who shows up, right?
Supposedly, yeah.
Yeah, we decided, or the Peter Capaldi episodes, we decided a while ago that we would get together and discuss the older Doctor Who, like arcs or storylines and stuff like that, because I just loved chatting with Barry about that stuff because he's such a Doctor Who fanatic.
It's embarrassing.
And it's just fun to talk Doctor Who too, you know, and I've seen some of the old arcs, you know, via Netflix, but I've never really sort of like hung in and tried to do like a big, you know, storyline or anything like that. So, Barry, why don't you talk about what we're watching?
What we're watching, slowly but surely, is the 16th season, thereabouts, ever aired. It was one of the Tom Baker seasons, the Fourth Doctor. And this is an entire season, which back in those days was many, many episodes, something on the order of 26, 45-minute episodes.
Really?
But what we're watching, yeah, the schedule was brutal. I mean, you know, you may have seen the old, that Adventure in Space and Time when they were showing William Hartnell basically dying doing the show. It was relentless. He shot something like 70 episodes in 18 months or something insane like that.
No way, really?
So, something crazy like that, yes.
And then how did they air them? Did they air them in 18 months?
I don't know. It was like one a week for a while. I mean, you know, there was more, they packed more in back in those days.
Yeah.
You know, there were fewer channels. Yeah. There were fewer shows. So I guess they just worked the people harder. I don't know.
So do you think it might have been like it wasn't like a Dark Shadow schedule or like a soap opera schedule where they were showing them every day? Right?
No, it was only once a week.
It was only once a week. Okay.
Yeah.
But he pumped out like that many in 18 months. So then they just must have been doing back, like they must have been building them up, right? If they were once a week and once he was done, they were still running his episodes, do you think? Or,
well, I don't know. I'm really not sure.
But you're the expert.
Well, William Hartnell's a little before my time, but right. Be that as it may, what we are watching was the 16th or so season, which the entire season was dedicated to the Doctor finding the six segments of the key to time. And he was instructed by the White Guardian of the universe to assemble these pieces so that he could take the assembled key and set the universe sort of back in harmony. It had gotten a little out of alignment, you know. It needs a tune-up. It's, you know, 10 billion years old. Everything needs an adjustment.
Yeah.
So this is pretty much then the Doctor Who version of the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah. Or it seems like the Cosmic Cube, because when they show the key to time, it's a giant, like, sort of transparent cube, which is what the Cosmic Cube used to be in the old Fantastic Four comics, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I wonder if they must have been influenced by some old Marvel comics, right?
I think it was a flattering imitation.
Yeah. So at this point, Doctor Who's been around for a little while, like the show. This is like early 80s, Barry?
I believe this was about 1978.
1978. Oh, okay. Wait, I have it on the Internet Movie Database. Yeah, it says 9th of September, 1978 for episode 2.
I know this way too well. This is embarrassing.
That's great. No, I mean, I've only really, like I said, I've dipped my toe in the older stuff, and I've seen William Hartnell, like the Dalek stuff, and I've seen the Spearhead from Space, which was the first.
Pertwee's first.
Yeah. Which there's a guy at work who is from the UK that I'm friendly with. And Pertwee is his doctor. He's like, oh, Pertwee was the man. Hmm. He was like so cool. And I'm like, wow, that's so interesting.
Right.
And then I did see one with the guy with the bowl haircut with my daughter.
Oh, Patrick Troughton.
Yeah, yeah. So I've seen some of those. And then I also saw The Ark in Space, which was terrible in my opinion. That was
really?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
That was actually a good one.
Was it?
Is this your first Tom Baker then?
No. I think The Ark in Space was Tom Baker.
It was.
Okay. Oh, and then I think I saw, was it Rebirth of the Daleks with Tom Baker?
Genesis
of the Daleks. Okay. So
that one is considered one of the best stories in the entire 50-year history.
I really liked that except for the ending. Like the ending was like them doing like Ring Around the Rosie and some like weird spiral and they were getting tossed. They left it on a cliffhanger, but the effects were just like so bad that I was like, wow.
Did they play the Benny Hill music while they
did not do that. Okay. They did not do that. So this is is it Rebos or Ribos? I think it's Rebos because that's the way they pronounced it.
I thought it was Ribos.
I think it's Rebos or something close to that, because I watched it today, this morning, half of it with my daughter and then half without her. And I think they said Rebos, but I'm not sure.
It was pronounced a couple of different ways over the course of the four episodes.
Yeah, you're probably right.
It depends. If you're from the north, it's Rybos.
Yeah, right. Nice. So talk about the story a little bit, Barry, because, I mean, how does it start off? Basically, Doctor Who, he's planning on going on a vacation. Actually,
to start off, you really need to know where you left off at the end of season 15. Which,
oh, really?
So he had just... There was a story in the end, the season ending of 15, was one of the few Gallifrey stories. It took place on Gallifrey. Uh-huh. Gallifrey had been invaded by Suntarans, and this is back when Suntarans were actually tough and scary as opposed to, you know, sort of a joke. But in any event, so he had helped thwart a Suntaran invasion on Gallifrey. His companion, Leela, who is a savage from another planet, who fell in love with, like, the captain of the guard. She stayed on Gallifrey to live there. His original dog, Canine, the robot dog, stayed with Leela to protect her. So we hit the ending on the season 15 is he takes out a box from the closet, and it says Canine Mark II on it. So he breaks the fourth wall, chuckles at the audience, and we fade to black. And so he's starting off, he's just lost his last companion, and he was tired and he needed a break. But so that tees up this story. He's traveling around and he's summoned by the White Guardian, whom we've never seen before in the other 15 years of this show.
Who has a wicker beach chair or something like that.
Well, he appeared to him in a form that he could appreciate.
Yeah, yeah, with an umbrella, yeah.
Sipping absinthe.
Yeah, oh, is that what he was sipping?
It was something green.
Yeah, it was something green. So, okay, but hold on, back up a little bit. So he Canine, the original Canine, left with somebody else.
Leela, yes.
And then he just pulls out a box, and it's like, oh, I've got Canine Mark II. So this is Canine II that we're introduced to.
Correct.
In this, and so he's like saying, "Canine, we're gonna go on a vacation. You're gonna love it. There's gonna be palm trees and beach." And then there's like this big like light moment. Like the doors open up and light shines through, and basically that's when he meets the the Lord of
the White Guardian.
The White Guardian. Okay. And so then, what does the White Guardian basically say to him?
He's telling him that, as I was saying a little bit before, the universe is out of balance.
Yeah.
That there's this artifact, this key to time, which he has used in the past to tweak the universe and put it in harmony. And because it's such a dangerous and powerful tool, he scattered the six pieces of the key throughout the cosmos so that it wouldn't fall into the wrong hands. And he disguised the pieces, of course, because that wouldn't be any fun otherwise. And he says, but, you know, look, the universe is out of kilter of sorts, and I need it. You've got to tweak it, and please bring back the six pieces, assemble it. I'll know what to do. You're on it. And this is actually very, there's a this happens a lot where, and certainly in the old series, where the Doctor used to not be quite as good at piloting the TARDIS as he is in the modern series. In the modern series, he says, I'm going here, boom, they go there, usually. Sometimes he gets the date wrong, but he usually lands where he wants to.
Yeah.
In the old series, he's quite shitty at piloting the TARDIS. He ends up, like, he constantly is promising his companions, we are going to go to a beautiful, warm, sunny vacation, and they'll end up, like, on Hoth, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, and so you're like, you'll see this great scene with the Sixth Doctor where, you know, Perry, the shapely American, faux American companion, steps out and she's in a bikini, and yet, you know, it's freezing out. It's like, I thought you said it was going to be summer. So the fact that he didn't land up on vacation with K-9 really should come as no surprise to a long watcher of the show at this point.
Gotcha.
But the fact is, really, his TARDIS got hijacked this time.
Yeah, yeah. So the White Guardian, that's what I wasn't quite clear on, and maybe I just, by the end of the watching the four episodes, I forgot about exactly what happened in the beginning. But so the White Guardian was the one who spread those pieces over the universe.
Yes.
Oh, and I guess you could, like, do you find out why? Like, because I'm like...
why did he spread them across?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, because he didn't want the key, the fully assembled key, to fall into the wrong hands, to wreak havoc with the universe.
Gotcha.
Which would be the Black Guardian?
For example, yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, gotcha.
Yes, because he warns him of the Black Guardian.
Beware.
Yeah, beware, yes. the Black or the Dark Guardian. I can't remember. It was the Black Guardian, right?
Black.
Yeah. So from there, that's when they head to Rebos or Rybos, right?
Depending on where you're from. Yes.
Oh, no, but he gets introduced to the new companion.
Right, actually.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right, Romana.
Yeah, Romana. What's your full name?
Does her full name is Romana Dvorak Trelendar.
Oh, my God, that's awesome. Who is Mary Tam?
Yes.
Yeah, the actress Mary Tam. And when she got introduced, I definitely sat up in my chair a little bit. I was like, I was like, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here? Because she's very attractive.
Jeez, lest you think that, you know, the roses or the Marthas are a modern invention. He's had cute companions throughout his history.
It seems like it. I mean, she definitely got my attention. And what was really funny is because I was watching it with my daughter, and my wife walked in the room, and she saw her, and she's like, I really like that outfit. So, you know, there's something for everyone. She's like, oh, she's got such a nice outfit. So there you go. I was like...
Is she talking about the sort of fuzzy hoodie thing that she was...
The white sort of like gown, you know, very sort of a regal, kind of look like almost like from like a snow planet or something from Frozen or something.
There was some definite Princess Leia... costume design in that too, also.
Oh,
I thought,
yeah.
Well, but it also matched her attitude. She was very haughty, you know.
Yeah.
You know, she was top of her class at the academy, you know, straight A's. She was, and you know, that's very, you know, it sort of sets up that this story was like a good old fashioned caper, like a classic buddy cop story, where you've got the seasoned grizzled vet who doesn't follow the rules being paired up with a new clueless rookie. And, you know, she's straight out of the academy, literally, and she's young. She's only 140. but no street smarts at all.
Yeah. It's funny because she shows up and she's got that attitude where she's just like, oh, maybe you can teach me something, you know, but probably not, you know.
Right.
And he's very much like, she says, like, I graduated first at the academy. And he's like, oh, you're impressed. He's like, is that supposed to impress me or something like that? You know, and then she makes fun of him like it's better than like barely graduating or something like that. And he's like, those records were supposed to be sealed. Like he gets like really offended. It was really cute. Like the introduction, like I very much enjoyed it. Like I was like, okay, like this looks like it's going in a fun direction, you know. I mean, once I got used to sort of like the very 70s sort of you know, atmosphere and everything.
Yeah. And then like once they, you know, track down the piece too. I mean, the Guardian gave him a way to track the pieces. It's a sort of all-in-one finder slash you know, revealer. When you it points the way to the pieces, and then when you touch it converts them out of their disguise into the actual piece of the cube.
Yeah, it's Romana. Romana had the thing and gives it to the doctor. It's like a wand slash Geiger counter. Because right. that's the sound that it makes as it gets closer to the So they end up on Ribos, whatever. We'll call it Ribos. And that's where they travel. And basically they end up in the middle of sort of like a big, giant sort of real estate swindle, right?
Scam, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, what's the character's name? I'm trying to look at the... Well, basically you've got two con artists.
Garon and...
On stuff,
that's right.
Oh, yeah, okay. And they're basically trying to sell a planet to Graf... I don't know how do you pronounce
it. The Graf Vindicae.
Who is a... he's like a deposed emperor, right? From another planet.
Right.
And basically the story behind him is... Who I loved. I loved that guy. Paul Seed is the actor's name. I guess he directs TV in the UK now. He's a director.
Oh, that's great.
I loved him. I thought he was great. He just like chewed the scenery and he was like really passionate. Like I thought he was great. But basically his character was a character that went off to fight an interstellar war for his people. Like, or I guess without permission or something like that.
Well, it's not quite clear because you mostly hear his side of it. But he comes back and they're like, yeah, you're deposed. You're a piece of crap.
Yeah, exactly.
His brother, like, I think his brother took over.
Yeah, his brother takes over. Garon, like, talks about the full story in, like, the third or fourth episode where he was like, yeah, he was the ruler of a planet and he wasn't very good. He was a tyrant. He went to go fight this war. And then his brother or half brother, while he was gone, took over. And then when he came back, like, sort of victorious from the war, they were like, F off. We don't need you anymore.
Right.
So that's his gripe. And so he's trying to buy this planet. Well, and that's, I mean, originally, why is he trying to buy the planet? To just build an army?
I think it had strategic, like, location value.
Yeah.
Resources, yeah.
Right, but I mean, because he saw the mining report initially, he wasn't that impressed. But then when he saw that, he heard that whole scam story about the Jethric being on there. This very powerful element or, naturally occurring mineral that, you could power a starship with. A rock the size of your fist.
Yeah. Well, that's what they end up discovering is that there's, or that this guy, the con artist, Garrick, right? Garon. Garon is basically kind of like lures them in even further by saying like, hey, there's this mine of this material.
Scringstone, he calls it.
Yeah, they call it Scringstone, but it's actually something else.
Jethric,
yeah. And
but it's actually something else.
Yeah. And so it's actually the key to time, which we end up finding out disguised. And so basically he lures the emperor in Graf in by saying like, oh, we've got this. There's this mine here, which is like extremely valuable. So the emperor's like, well, screw raising an army on this planet. We'll just buy an army because this stuff is so valuable.
Right.
So, basically the doctor and Romana wander in the search for the key to time or this piece. They wander into like the biggest real estate scandal like in this corner of the universe or something.
Right. And it's taking place on a world that is unaware of alien culture. It's sort of a medieval, so almost Game of Thrones-ish in a way, because it's got the long seasons, they're on a strange orbit, so there are just long periods of frozen ice and then periods of great heat.
Yeah.
So that was kind of an interesting touch too, I thought, is that, it's a real estate scandal by these aliens who are selling this world that they really don't have claim to in a way.
Yeah. That was great because, I mean, that's sort of like the opposite of the prime directive in Star Trek, which is like if you meet people who are like way below, you're not allowed to interfere. And these guys were basically trying to sell this planet and basically give them lease to like basically give, Graf lease to just take over. Like, we're here, we'll sell you the planet and you could take these people over and you can maybe catch them up with your technology, build an army, go back to your planet, solar system, universe, whatever, and take over with these people, right?
Well, at one point, Garon, I think, did say that, you can't build a base here. It's only a level 2 planet. It's going to be 10,000 years before they're level 3.
Yeah.
So that apparently there is this like galactic police force that would probably clamp down on that. But, you know, I guess, you know, you can build something in the middle of the desert slash tundra where no one's going to go, you know, if you, especially if they're medieval and they think the earth is that Rybos is still flat and you'll fall off the edge, you know, he'll just go far away from where they have these, their tiny little cities. I think he could make it work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's some sort of plan there for him to either build or buy an army and go back and conquer his homeworld or something like that.
Right.
But
right.
as is often the case, things kind of go wrong once the doctor shows up and, you know, everyone's plans get fucked. Like, I really thought, like, there's a lot of things. Like, I actually really liked this. I thought it was charming. I thought it was really a lot of fun. There were definitely like little issues that I had with it, but I mean, as a whole, I thought it was a really fun adventure. I mean, and so Barry, tell us why, like, you kind of recommended it to us, because I mean, since you're the expert, like, what is it about this? Cause you're really excited. I mean, you're sending me emails like, when are we going to watch it? Are we going to watch it next week? Is it coming? Like, I got notes. I wrote down notes. So like, what is it about this particular one that you thought was really good for me and Paul to kind of like delve into? Because I know Paul's seen more than I have, I think. You know, right, Paul?
Probably not.
No?
Probably not. I haven't seen a huge degree. You know, we're probably equal.
Oh, okay. So Barry, what was it about this particular series where you were like, let's watch this one?
Well, it's a great introduction into the old series, the original, the classic Who.
Yeah.
This one in particular had some of the Doctor's best tricks. He hypnotized the guard with a pocket watch.
Yeah.
He dressed up as an enemy guard, you know, cavorting around. I mean, he's done this a few times, but, like, this had it all. This was, like, everything, you know. A lot of the tropes that he's famous for in one ball, you know. There's something else is that he kills Graf and Decay at the end, you know, puts the bomb on him because he doesn't suffer tyrants and murderers. You know, it's a very revolutionary theme for the show. But he doesn't mind a thief like Garen and Unstuff because, you know, he stole the TARDIS.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, he's like, yeah, okay, they're mostly harmless. You know, some of the other things I like about this episode are that as a, you know, it's really representative of Classic Who, in which when he's explaining things to Romana, it's quiet, you know, there's no running, they're not shouting over loud background music, you know, they're basically all lounging about in Graf Vindicay's, they're prisoners, and this is a great time for exposition for the audience, you know, instead of me having to watch a Modern Who show episode with the closed captioning on because there's so much background music and explosions going on, you know, I could just sort of sit back and relax and like, oh, tell us what's happening, Doctor, and I say, I don't mind if I do.
Yeah.
So, you know, and, you know, even K-9 sort of like trundles along and everybody just waits for him. It's like, we've got time. Look, we've got, you know, it's a four-part show. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. There was definitely a little bit of K-9 like buzzing around where I was like, come on, man, hurry up. Like, people are dying. Like, let's let's move it, dude. Like, you know, fetch. So I know what you mean, though. Like, it's definitely a much sort of quieter, like mellow experience with Tom Baker. Like, it's definitely sort of like, or at least this series was, where, and you're absolutely right, this would be, because I remember when I first got Netflix and the Doctor Who episodes started showing up, I was like, where do I begin? Like, there's so much stuff.
It's daunting.
You know, and I started with the Ark in Space, I remember, and watching it like one summer afternoon and just being like, I have no idea what the fuck is going on. Like, and not just that, but just being like, I think the Ark in Space was like bug people and like, just like, wow, the effects were just like really not up to par. And the ending was like really, it's like kind of like they were overreaching with that one a little bit. And it seems
I agree that, like, I think this is a really good jumping off point too for us to, if you're interested in Classic Who, it's a really cool way to jump in because they sort of give you everything you need right from the get-go. I mean, you know, if you've seen the previous seasons, that helps you a lot. But, like, you know, I was able to jump in on this with no problem. And at the beginning, they're like, okay, you're on a quest. You're after these things. It's going to go like this. Here's your partner. Go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a great setup, and it definitely, you guys are absolutely right. And the fact that, it's just like, basically, here's this guy. I mean, you already know that there's space involved, and you're going to, they basically lay everything out so that you can understand it, you know, A, B, C, D, and you're ready to go. And you know, they introduce Romana, who's like a new character with the audience. So he has somebody to explain something to, like, every 5 minutes. It's Romana ended up being, like, a really good device, and she was actually a really good character too, because I love the bits where she would be like psychoanalyzing everyone and being like, this is like why, like, she's like some kind of space therapist, like,
yeah,
like, yeah. Yeah.
It's like wow, they teach, you know, Freudian psychology on Gallifrey.
Yeah, I know, it was great. So I mean I really do like this is much different because they're only like 24 minutes each, right?
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
seems like because they're taking their time or they're moving slower than the modern episodes, they fit a lot more in. Doesn't it seem like it? Because I remember thinking like, oh, the episode's almost over. I kind of like looking at the timer on the Blu-ray player. I'm like, oh, we're only like 12 minutes in. Like, there's more. Cool. Like, you know what I mean? So
they didn't spend any time on special effects for sure. So.
Well, yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah, right. Well, certainly not the makeup or creature effect. You know.
Yeah. Although, God.
Although there was a really fun little makeup thing. My wife and I were watching it. We noticed at the beginning that, like, what's wrong with Tom Baker's lip?
Yeah.
Does he have like a cold sore or something?
Yeah,
and then
right.
it goes away or whatever. So I looked it up. And apparently, late into the shooting, the actor Seed, the one that you were talking about, had a Jack Russell Terrier that bit Tom Baker on the lip.
Are you serious?
Serious.
Oh
and,
my god!
And they had to cover it up with makeup. As a matter of fact, a lot of they chose to shoot him from the other angle in a lot of ways, and I think even having him wear that crazy like helmet. A lot of the time, when he was disguised, had something to do with that too.
Is that the Jack Russell Terrier in question?
that's my dog. He's
Paul
going.
That's great. So, oh wow. So then, but they must have shot out of sequence because there were definitely like sequences where they had Paul Baker and Tom Baker. And they had like a close-up of him, and he didn't have anything on his lip. It seems
yeah.
like when he's introduced to the White Guardian, that's when he had. Because my daughter, she said the same thing. She's like, "What's wrong with his lip?" I was like, "I don't know. Ignore it. I don't know. He's the doctor." I was like, "Let it go." But
yeah, they definitely shot out of sequence for these things and assembled them like movies.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because I felt do either of you have an idea of what like the shooting schedule might have been like on something like this? Like where basically like were they shooting an episode a week? Like that's something I'd really like to find out because it seems like a lot of the time like somebody might have been acting in a different show than somebody else. That was sort of like one of my big things where I was like, it seems like this guy is in a different show than that guy. Like the pacing. You know what I'm saying? Of the
right.
scenes and the acting. Did anyone else kind of notice that? Like, I didn't think the acting was bad, but I felt like that there were definitely scenes or sequences where you would cut to, like, a different place. And maybe that, like you said, Paul, like, it's just because they shot out a sequence. But it seemed like the seer, when she was, like, doing her thing.
Yeah.
I felt like, yeah, this seems, like, really kind of hokey. And, like, she doesn't seem like she's as into it as everybody else. You know what I mean?
She seemed pretty damn into it to me. But it was really interesting because, like, one of the one things that really comes across in this is the unpredictability of the show. I mean,
yeah.
like, when they brought out the seer, it was like suddenly you'd stepped onto a Ken Russell movie, and I was like, what's going on here? And I think that's one of those qualities of television that, you know, that we're really missing in today's, like, yeah, move it forward, you know, have something blowing up, you know, the whole universe is at stake at every moment, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like this, just when you thought you were sort of getting settled into it, they whipped something else out where you were just like, what the hell is that? You know what I mean? Like the catacombs, or the dude that was obviously like standing in for, Cosmos came out last week. What's that guy? Bruno, who had the vision of the universe. Like, what was that character's name? I can't remember.
It began with a B, though.
He was a heretic, let me tell you that.
Yeah, I mean...
Actually, was it Bruno? Did they call him Bruno?
No, it wasn't. Bruno is the real guy.
No, I know that, but...
I'm trying to look it up right now. But
I think it did begin with a B.
Binro. So they switched it around. Yeah, Binro, like, one of the con guys, Unstaff, basically... Yeah. Like tries to escape into these catacombs where they have these monsters at one point, and he meets this guy Binro, and because it is like sort of like a backward world, like Game of Thrones or medieval times or something, which is great too, because that's the thing, it seems like they just raided like the local like Shakespeare theater for all the costumes. It was fantastic. Like the costuming was great. Like that's what I really loved about it.
And I love that moment too where they get together, because like it's a really humanizing moment for you know, Unstaff too, you know, where he's sitting there with this guy, you know, basically telling him, yes, the universe is bigger, you know, what your beliefs are true. It was a really nice, like, quiet moment between two people who weren't even like the principal actors, you know, and that's the kind of cool moments that this like old style of television affords.
Yeah,
it gives you this like texture. It textures the story, because was it necessary to advance the plot? No, I mean, what it was good is though it helps. It did help further develop Unstaff's character that he's basically a decent guy. He just is a con artist.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is like Unstaff. At first, he comes across sort of like, you know, like Abbott to his like Costello or something like that. At first, he was just like sort of, it seemed like he was just like a minor character or something, like a sidekick, not Abbott, but you know what I mean?
He would be more Costello, I would think, because he was the one getting sent down to, you know, poison the Shrivenzal.
Yeah. So, I mean, they definitely have that moment where they add sympathy, and then, not to ruin it for anybody, but Binro has like a pretty horrible moment towards the end where you're just like, oh man, they fucking did that to Binro. How could they do that to Binro? Like, I actually thought that. I was like, oh, man, they fucked up Binro. Like, you know, so they have this moment where, you know, Graf is obviously kind of a scumbag, but, you know, you don't really get to see how much of a jerk-off he is up until the end, where he starts messing with people to get, you know, basically this rock that is disguising as the Key of Time. I thought that was a really good touch, too. I thought the writing all around was pretty decent, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the acting, I mean, it's kind of funny you said that they raided the Shakespearean, you know, group for the costuming.
Yeah,
they got their actors from there too. You know,
I mean,
it's a very like Shakespearean stage style, which again with this story totally works because it's a medieval, you know, setting. Everyone is very much larger than life.
Yeah.
Oh, even the fact that the Graf Vindicae was deposed by his brother, classic Shakespeare, and I mean classic English history.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
That stuff happened all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it comes across so well too. You know, I mean, it in a way, it's like it ages it, but the same thing that ages it also sort of makes it a little timeless.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got to give a shout out to the guy that played Garen, Ian. I think it's Ian Cuthbertson or something.
Mm-hmm.
I love that guy. Like, I thought he was great. He just like commanded every scene that he was in. He was a con artist, but he was like kind of jolly. He was never like, I just loved his character all around. It definitely seemed like the type of guy that you could be taken in by, you know what I mean? Like very much like, oh, let's go get some mead, like, you know what I mean? Like he would
kind of reminded me of like a Harry Mudd or a Cyrano Jones.
That exactly. Yeah. You nailed it, because that's what I was thinking. Harry Mudd. Exactly. Yeah. When I was watching it, you nailed it. Wow, Barry.
And it goes back to that Falstaff figure, you know, like the raging, you know, crazy guy who you just can't help but be around because, you know, he's so much fun.
Yeah. I enjoyed him. I mean, basically, I did like everyone. Did they say, they said Garon was from Earth, right?
I think so.
Yes. Yeah.
So in the future, though, correct?
Yes.
I would guess so.
If he's driving spaceships around. But they didn't really go into like his story, like how he became a con artist or anything like that, right?
No.
Yeah. Not too much.
It's funny that nobody cared about like the crown jewels at all. Like there's this big, because I mean, part of the plot is that, you know, this guy Garon is trying to con Graf into buying this planet, and he hides the rock amongst these primitive people's like crown jewels, like the jewels of royalty of that planet, which we never got to see that either, like the royalty, which I guess you didn't, but you didn't need to. But no. At no point is anyone just like, hey, let's loot the gold. You know what I mean? They're all so busy with like trying to figure out like what's going on with this rock. You know, I thought that was pretty interesting, you know. So I did have a problem. And Barry, I discussed this with you in the email. The creature that was guarding the jewels, the crown jewels.
The Shriven Cell, yeah.
The Shriven Cell. Romana, like, sneaks in and directly looks at it and then just decides, hey, I'll go into this room, like, in the very beginning of the series. And I was like, wow, either she's not bright or they're just trying to make me just be like, ignore that. That didn't happen. Like, they basically have this beast that looks like a dragon, which my daughter was a little scared of when she first saw it. Aww. And it looks ridiculous. I mean, honestly, like, the effects... You know, the creature's effects were not up to par. That's fine.
But although there was some decent bloody mouth there when it was there in the
Yeah. Well, that's what my daughter asked me. She's like, "What's that red stuff?" And I was like, "Sweetie, it's blood." And she's like, "Blood?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, it eats animals, so it has blood." And she's like, "Oh." So you know, I was just like, but she goes. They have one of these creatures sleeping with the door open so that if anybody tries to steal the jewels, it'll wake up and come out. And basically the first time the doctor and Romana sneak into that chamber, Romana's looking around and she sneaks under the door and goes into the creature's like whatever sleeping lair. And she looked like when she goes sneaks under the door, you can't not see it. It's right in front of the door. And she looks directly at it. And then she's like, you know, I'll come in here. And which sets up the cliffhanger for the first episode, because the door starts coming down and she's going to get stuck in there and it starts waking up. And well, she's like, doctor, help me.
You know, as I mentioned, she has no street smarts at all.
Not at all. Well, I was like, God does not give with both hands. She's beautiful, but she's not very smart. You know what I mean? That was like a big snafu on my part. But I have to say, like, this sort of thing, like when I finished watching this one, I wanted to go directly to the next one on the Netflix queue. Like, this is the first time that's happened with me, where I've seen an episode of the old stuff, and I'm like, I want to keep going. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Because that was the same thing. My wife and I had the same conversation. Literally, she's just like, okay, so what's next? What's the next piece?
Yeah.
And like, I said, we're saving that for the next podcast.
Yeah, I know. Right. Well, I actually watched this twice. I watched it when we first decided we were going to do it, and I got like the first three episodes through it. And then when it finally started becoming like, okay, we're going to get organized and finally do this particular episode. Again, I watched it this morning because they're not even 2 hours when you watch them back to back.
Oh no, you can really bang them right out.
Yeah, you bang them right out. And I have to say, like, for my 7-year-old, it was appropriate. Like, there was nothing like racy or anything like really terrible, like as far as violence was concerned. So I enjoyed it. Like I mean, it's something that I could sit and watch with my kid, you know.
Well, you know, it was originally a children's show.
Yeah. And there's, you know, there are children's shows, and then there's, you know, there's certain age ranges, but you never know. Like I don't think that my daughter's ready for like the original Star Trek yet. You know what I mean? Like, I think maybe there's a couple of creatures in there that might scare her too much or something. Like, maybe in the next year or two, like, I'll expose her to that. But this I thought was perfect. Like, there was nothing like really, really terrible in it that would scare a little kid.
You know, right, and then you can actually, and as far as classic Star Trek goes, you know, you can even gloss over even a year or two from now. That's, you know, when she says, "Daddy, Why is Captain Kirk getting out of that bed and putting his boot on?
You know, yeah,
like exactly. Oh, he had a rock in his shoe.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, yeah, I just really thought everything was really good about this episode. I mean, look, it's not the modern Who. It's not like the big explosions, like you said, Barry. It's not. So anyone who's looking for that, this is definitely more on the level of like, you know, like. Well, I mean, like late 70s, early 80s, like BBC sort of quality. But yeah. Still, for the time, what's really funny to me, like I thought for the time and knowing that the budget restraints that they had, they did a really good job with this. I mean, the effects still seem like 60s era Star Trek, like with the lasers and stuff. Like I was like, whoa. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it didn't take away from my enjoyment of it, if you can look past it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a product of its time, and the main thing is, does the story and the, you know, the acting carry the day, and it totally does.
Yeah, and I definitely have to say that this is definitely one of the ones where I was like, I get it, like with Tom Baker, you know what I mean? Like a couple of the other ones that I saw, like I liked him, but something didn't really gel. And maybe because he was sort of like playing sort of like maybe a bit more parental figure here to Romana, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Where it seemed like he knew that she was a smart ass and he was kind of fed up with her a little bit. But he also was like, I got to watch out for this one because she's a little too big for her britches. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, so Barry, what are some of the things that you remember, like, when you first saw it? Like, what were some of the things, like, how far into, like, Doctor Who were you when you first saw this series?
Well, you're talking about The Key to Time?
Yeah.
Well, there's an interesting personal aspect to this, is that I had seen a number of the previous seasons over and over and over again on PBS.
Yeah.
From the time I was about 7 or 8 years old. Up until I was a, you know, teenager through college. And I had seen basically from the beginning of Tom Baker, the robot episode, up until the one right before this one, Invasion of Time. And then PBS stopped buying them and they would just cycle back to robot. So this episode was one of the first quote unquote new ones I saw, you know, actually much later than it aired. But to me, it's like, when I saw that this was going to be, you know, aired on PBS, I saw this as like, oh my God, I haven't seen this one. This is incredible. So yeah. I was riveted. You know, I was watching this, you know, very carefully. So this one is a personal favorite of mine, only because of the chronology of when I saw it. But you know, it also has all the great elements to it.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So you had seen a lot of Tom Baker before this.
Yes.
And like, did they show it on PBS and you just knew that it was going to be on and you were like, oh my God, like you found it in TV Guide or something?
Exactly. Or? Yeah. They used to have this book that you could look at every week.
Yeah, I know. Oh, wow. That's great. But so when you saw it, besides that, like, what was it in this that like kind of blew your mind back? Like when you first saw it, did it have an impression on you when you first, or was it like later on when you realized that this was going to be sort of part of a bigger sort of arc that you were like, wow, this is important. You know what I mean?
Well, I was surprised that the arc was going to last as long as it did. You know, I didn't realize going into it that it was going to be basically a full season's worth. I mean, I had no idea what a season was, you know, of Doctor Who, because they would just show them, you know, almost randomly on PBS, but they didn't have them necessarily in order. They didn't always have all of them. They would edit them so they could put in more commercials.
Oh, so it was basically the way that Fox treats any television show.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Commercials on PBS?
No. Well, originally, it was on Channel 9. It was an independent station. That's where I first saw them. But then later on, PBS got into the mix.
Oh, that's great. So, I mean, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, this definitely holds up to what I've seen before. I mean, like, I get Tom Baker. Although, I did have a little bit of a problem with Baker's acting at points, because I really felt like, it seemed like Baker would react before he heard what the person was saying. Sometimes, you know what I mean? Like his reactions were sort of, like, pre-planned, Do you understand? Like, yeah. like this person will say that, and then I'm going to do this, or I'm going to make a face. Like, to me, he was a little bit, like, he was very charming, but at the same time, he was, like, sort of, like, the least natural in places. Does that make sense?
He's a Time Lord. He's seen it all before.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, he's actually operating 30 seconds ahead of the rest of us.
Yeah, yeah. So, how many more pieces are there to this?
There are five more, and actually, the next piece was a story written by Douglas Adams. So
really?
I think you'll enjoy that one.
I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, I can't wait. So, Romana, tell me a little bit about, well, Mary Tam, she only sticks around for this one season, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and is she considered like a big, is she remembered fondly, like in the series? Like, is she considered a decent companion? Or
absolutely. Like, Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Romana, I mean, I believe most people think of both Romanas the same way they think of the Doctor. You know, you have your favorite Romana, but you also know that it's the same person. You know,
there's another Romana.
Yes.
Oh, so she regenerates.
Next season.
So she regenerates at the end of the Key to Time?
No, next season.
Oh, next season.
Beginning of next season.
Oh, okay. Does she stick around for the regeneration, or is it just like... Oh, okay.
She's out.
So it's a brand new actress.
Basically, this woman just swans into the control room, and he's like, "What are you doing?"
Really? Wow.
Once you've seen The Key to Time, I don't think we need to devote a whole podcast to Romana's regeneration, but it's hysterical.
Oh, really? No, I mean, I'm ready to podcast the whole Key to Time and whatever, because this is definitely the thing that sort of gets me really on board with the old Doctor Who, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think this is the one that makes me go, oh, this is fun, you know, whereas any other episodes I was trying to see, it was because I either wanted to know, like, more about the Daleks, or I wanted to know more about, like, one of his companions. So for me, it seemed like I didn't know, like, I was kind of, like, stuck in the middle of something, you know, whereas this one, like we said before, like, it's like, okay, it's like those comic books where you would see, like, the blurb on the, you know, great starting off point. This is where it all begins, you know? Like, it definitely hooked me in, and I'm definitely down for more, so.
All we needed was Barry to show us the way to where to start.
I know, the big Doctor Who fan.
I'm always available.
So, there's a little bit of crazy trivia about Mary Tam, because I looked her up. Well, first of all, she's of Estonian heritage, which that was where my dad was from, so I was like, oh,
interesting.
Estonian. But do you know that when she passed away, because she passed away in 2012, which is far too young, but she passed away in 2012, that her husband, after the eulogy of her funeral, several hours later, he died right after.
No.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Sad.
It's so sad, yeah. So he basically, I think it was an aneurysm or something like that, where he basically died like several hours after, you know, she passed away. So here we go. She was married to Marcus Ringrose from 1978 until her death. Ringrose himself died just hours after his wife's funeral.
Ugh.
Yeah, they had one daughter, Lauren, and a grandson, Max. So it's so sad that she's passed away, because I really think it would have been fun to, like, maybe see her in the new series, especially, or that character or something like that. I wonder if Romana will show up again, because I liked that character. I could
well,
see
so
her.
if they ever do sort of unlock Gallifrey again, you know, then I think there's definitely room to see her come back.
There were some of the stories. I think they were the audio adventures.
Oh, that's right.
Where I think there's actually a third regeneration of Romana. She ends up becoming president of Gallifrey during, like, some part of some, you know, it's some of its more wartime, warlike aspects. I haven't heard any of them. I've just read a little bit about it, but there is, if you look up, you know, Romana 3, you'll see a little bit about it.
Oh, that's cool. So, I mean, I would say, yeah, I really recommend checking this out, but really only if you have patience for older stuff, you know what I mean? Anybody who's like wants the whiz bang of, like, or is expecting, like, huge special effects. I mean, anybody who knows Doctor Who at this point or has researched, like, the new stuff should know at this point what you're in for, right? I mean, you really should, you know, like, just expect something probably, you know, a little less like in quality, but not a little less in like in the heart of the show, because I really felt like this one had a decent amount of heart from like all. Like there was a warmth to it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That I really appreciated, and I definitely was like, I want to watch the next one, and I'm definitely looking forward to, like, sitting down with my kid and being like, let's watch Doctor Who, you know, so I can avoid another episode of My Little Pony or something like that.
But you know, listen, if you're very careful and you watch My Little Pony quite carefully with a keen eye, you'll notice that there's a pony that's got a cutie mark that's in the shape of an hourglass. He's referred to as Dr. Hooves. I'm not even kidding.
That's hysterical.
There are other episodes. There are, you know, he has, if you look also carefully, sometimes he has pony versions of some of his companions in the story.
That's
just
funny.
In the background. I mean, it's fleeting, so you've got to give it a lot more attention than I can tell you want to.
I mean, that's the thing, is I appreciate the artistry of My Little Pony. Like, I'm like, yeah, that's really pretty beautiful stuff. But after a while, although I will have to say that I picked up the comics for my daughter the other day, like a graphic novel. And to hear your daughter reading the Southern Ponies dialogue in a Southern accent, that's just gold, man.
It's just there.
Awesome.
That's just gold. But so any other like final thoughts about this, or Barry, any other insights that you've had through the years regarding this, or just the Key to Time in general?
I think it's a great season of TV. It's one of my favorites. Of the six segments, of the six, you know, portions of this story, I think my favorite is the sixth one, the Armageddon Factor, which
that's a great title.
It's a bit darker than the Rybos operation. But you know, you've got these two planets that are engaged in a perpetual war they're trying to destroy each other, you know, for centuries maybe, and there's a whole anti-militarism thing in there, and it's fascinating. And plus, it also features Lala Ward as Princess Astra, who shows up later on in Doctor Who.
That sounds like a My Little Pony character. It's Princess Astra. Wow.
She could be.
She could be. Well, so you're saying shit gets real at the end.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, that's
okay.
Awesome.
All right. Well,
I'm looking forward to it.
Let's meet back here at some bat time, some bat channel, and talk about the next part.
But I'm assuming you want to not skip to the end. You want to do the pirate.
Oh, yeah. No, we got it. We're doing the next one.
Let's do this in order.
Excellent.
Yeah, we're going to do it in order. I'm excited. Like, I'm psyched. I don't think I'm quite as excited as you, Barry, but I'm excited because I love your enthusiasm.
Remember, I've seen these all already, though, so I'm excited for you.
Yeah, I know. But the thing, like, I just appreciate it's great when, you know, like, we do a weekly podcast, and sometimes I get caught up in the grind of recording it, and then just having somebody be like, let's fucking do this, man. Like, I'm ready. I'm taking notes. I'm like, that's just really cool. I thought that was really funny. I was like, wow, he really wants to do this.
I don't do anything half-assed. That's the problem.
Yeah, well, sir, I guess I do. I don't know. But cool. Like, thanks for doing this, guys. This has been a great episode. I mean, Paul, do you have any other thoughts about it, or like?
Oh, no. Oh, man, I just really had a fun time. You know, it was a great sort of, it's just a great reminder of, you know, sort of the way TV used to be. And you know, I'm happy about Netflix mostly for that. You know, between you know, with watching this, I mean, you can just go back and see so many cool things. It's neat to see the history.
Yeah. And it's interesting for me is that, you know, because I used to joke around about, I'm a big fan of like foreign television, especially like old UK TV. But I used to joke around about like old BBC sort of production qualities, especially in sort of like their sci-fi stuff or whatever. But, you know, beyond Doctor Who, I mean, what's that show, The Tomorrow People or something like that, which is just like, ugh. But, you know, I mean, the thing is like watching these, like I didn't have anything taken away from that. If anything, there's this old BBC show called Survivors, which I really love, which is not nowhere near as popular as Doctor Who, very obscure. but I have the DVDs, and it's like watching a stage play almost. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really like about it. Like, I'm like, it feels like that when you go and you see like a really entertaining sort of fun stage play, you know, that's been recorded. So yeah, I dig it. And I think anybody who has kids that like sci-fi, you know, and you know, you want to spend time with your kid, you want to like enjoy something that's probably wholesome and not too scary, like this would be it. I highly recommend it.
You know, it's awesome. Funny because now my 7-year-old, who just popped out of bed, whenever she's watching My Little Pony, anytime Dr. Hooves saunters on screen, she'll be like, "Daddy, come see, it's Dr. Hooves." And I have to say, I get excited.
That's so awesome. Great. Yeah, I know. It's great being a dad and seeing your kid like the stuff that you like, you know, or at least tolerate it.
Right.
Because she'd be more than happy to watch My Little Pony or Jake and the Neverland Pirates or whatever. But I'm like, she'll sit and watch, you know, Adam West Batman with me. And you know what I mean? I think the one thing she gets excited about is Linda Carter Wonder Woman. So. Yeah, it's awesome.
Something everyone can agree on.
Yeah, true. It's true. All right, so this has been another episode of Part Time Fanboy. This has been the first part of The Key to Time, the Ribos operation. We're going to be here in the next month or so, or several weeks, and do the next part. What's the next part called?
The next part is called The Pirate Planet, and it was written by Douglas Adams.
Oh, we're going to do The Pirate Planet. We are going to rock that pirate planet. Let's do it. Awesome, guys. Thanks for joining us. Another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Hopefully, we'll be back next week or so with another episode. And, you know, check us out on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Check out the website, parttimefanboy.com. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing. I'm doing part-time. Part-time fanboy.